Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Matthew Bradkovich has supported Independent Tech News directly for 5 years. Be like Matthew. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, February 19th, 2019. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from the slowly thawing fields of Finland, I'm Patrick Beja.
And I'm the show's producer from somewhere in L.A. County, Roger Ting.
And we are very happy that Patrick is thawed out and ready to talk to us today because we have some news about Google getting into game streaming, which I find quite intriguing, Patrick. And I know you've been following this and can explain it to us.
Absolutely.
All right.
I can do it now in one sentence.
Wait. We'll get to it. We'll get to it in a minute.
All right.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Oh, this is a good one, guys. Samsung's new foldable phone will be called the Galaxy Fold. Surprise! Evan Blass, a.k.a. EvLeaks on Twitter, who is very deep in Samsung leaks, reported details about that and the Galaxy S10 family of devices ahead of tomorrow's launch. But Samsung itself ran a TV commercial airing prematurely, supposedly, in Norway that backed up the claims. Among the things shown in the commercial are a hole punch dial for the front-facing camera, an in-screen fingerprint reader, and the ability to wirelessly charge another device.
Wait, you said supposedly. Do you think Samsung intentionally leaked this themselves? Because they're like, why not? Evan Blass is going to leak everything anyway.
I don't know. You're right.
Yeah. No, I think it could be intentional. Everyone's going to be looking forward to it now. Yeah.
I don't think you can really run a TV ad unintentionally.
Well, somebody could put the wrong.
There's so many things to go into,
queue, right? I mean,
supposedly stands.
Walmart's latest earnings report: U.S. sales up 4.2% over the same time last year, and a 43% rise in e-commerce sales in the U.S., beating analysts' expectations. Walmart said the strong e-commerce growth was due to the expansion of its grocery pickup and delivery businesses and broader offering on Walmart.com.
And a follow-up to something we talked about on a previous DTNS, Ghostery published a study Friday showing theirs and other ad blocker extensions had sub-millisecond impact on Chrome network requests, using that to dispute the need to change how ad blocking extensions work in Chrome, which had been justified as helping performance. The Chrome team has now withdrawn their plans to require extensions to use declarative net request APIs instead of the older web request API. Web request API is going to stick around for now. If you remember, that would have limited or broken how many ad blocking extensions worked. So all that talk that we had ended up with Ghostery convincing Chrome to pull it back, and things are just going to stay for ad blocking extensions the way they have, at least for now. All right, let's talk a little bit about an interesting use of streaming video going on in France, Patrick.
Yeah, a number of French Twitch and YouTube channel producers have banded together to organize Le Grand Débaton, which is a French pun, kind of funny, but anyway, inviting members of the French government to discuss social and political issues with citizens and influencers. The discussions were streamed on Twitch mainly and YouTube and incorporated interactions with chat rooms. The initiative follows the unrest and Gilets Jaunes movement and the countrywide Grand Débat that the government is organizing to consult the people over a period of several weeks.
So what's the pun?
Is it right? That was my question. question too.
It sounds like grand debate.
What's
grand
funny
debate
about this that we don't catch?
All right, so the Grand Débat is the title of that big debate consultation that the government is putting together, and the verb to debate, when said in the first person, first plural person, is débattons. So that means it's like the let's debate all of us together. Using the basic, it's a pun. You can't explain a pun in a different language.
It doesn't make it funny to when you explain it. Trust me, but I get it now. I now understand.
A little context,
right? Yeah.
So the idea here being that while the government is doing its own events to extend the debate and have discussion about how France should work, this was an effort to kind of bring in younger folks, YouTube creators. What did this end up being?
Yeah, I think what was noteworthy in this, it was a 11 hours of debate with members of the actual cabinet of the government.
Okay.
Not the president himself, but the prime minister also took part in some of it. And the interesting part was that there were a lot of actual content creators from YouTube aimed at young people, some political, some not political at all. There were Twitch streamers and, citizens, students, high school students, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is really an effort from what I understand, from those Twitch and YouTube channel producers to get the youth interested in the debate about the future of the country. Now, whether or not it was an exercise in PR for the government, which some people have said, I think the initiative is interesting to go where the young people are.
So on a scale of from hello, fellow teenagers to, hey, that's cool. Where did this fall?
I think the format and the form was very cool, and I will let the substance of it to the appreciation of each person, who will probably appreciate it differently depending on their political leanings. I think the format works, surprisingly, and the people who participated in the debate, the creators and citizens, had interesting questions and discussions.
Well, in other news, Amazon's everywhere, but you might not know that it has operated a joint venture in China since 2004 as a way to buy imported goods. Keijing reported Tuesday that Amazon is in talks to merge its China business with another cross-border shopping platform called Kaola, run by China's NetEase. Amazon had 6% of China's import shopping business, well behind NetEase's Kaola, Alibaba's Tmall Global, and JD.com. Merging with Amazon would also be a way to boost Kaola's inventory. So it seems like it's a match made in heaven.
Yeah, neither one are commenting on this, but it is interesting because Amazon would still hold a part of this. It's a merger. They're not selling it off. Amazon already has to operate as a joint venture, as most foreign companies do in China. So it's not like they aren't already involved with a Chinese company. And this would allow the Amazon venture to have access to Kaola's large market share, their leading market share for people looking to shop for imported goods into China. And it would give Kaola access to all of those imported goods that Amazon has. Amazon has access to a lot more goods than most Chinese companies. So it does seem like it would be a win-win for these companies within China anyway.
Agreed.
All right.
I was just going to say, I see NetEase and I think they invest in every game company that I hear of ever, either them or Tencent.
This is their way to stay ahead of, just in case that business is, they've reinvented themselves multiple times, and this is kind of the next step for them, I think. That's a good point. Huawei founder and CEO Ren Zhengfei gave interviews to the BBC and CBS this week. He told the BBC, even if they persuade more countries, they meaning the US, not to use us temporarily, we can always scale things down a bit. Saying he doesn't feel like Huawei is under an existential threat. He also said, our company will never undertake any spying activities. If we have any such actions, then I'll shut the company down. He told CBS that it is not possible that the Huawei equipment being used has a backdoor. However, on a separate note, not actually even conflicting with anything that he said, the information reports that its sources say a Huawei engineer met with the maker of a sensor for the Apple Watch in order to press for details on how it was made. The supplier says it did not tell them anything, but the information says that apparently Huawei rewards employees with bonuses pegged to the confidential value of information they collect for the company. Now, Huawei said in response to this that it respects third-party intellectual property and requires suppliers to uphold a high standard of ethics. But it does, to me, Patrick, show that Huawei being accused of spying on governmental accusations, easy for them to defend. They feel comfortable saying, no, we're not doing that. Huawei being accused of intellectual property theft, however, possibly harder for them to deny.
Yeah, I think those are really two very different issues. I would not be surprised if most Chinese companies and possibly many non-Chinese companies engage in IP appropriation. I don't want to say theft, but
nicely, nicely put.
and I do believe that it would be an entirely different issue to essentially open a back door for your government. Those are not the same. The CEO is Ren Zhengfei is saying seems like all the things that he would be saying, except maybe I will shut the company down if we see a backdoor one day. That seems a little bit forceful.
Yeah. When they asked him about connections to the army and the government, he got a little quieter. He deferred a little bit on that. So, you know, it was clear which ones he felt very confident in answering and which ones he would have rather not have been asked. The Chinese trade minister is coming to Washington, D.C. later this week to discuss trade negotiations. It's no accident that he is out here doing this campaign right now, because I do think that there's a trade gambit going on that's part of this. And accusing Huawei of government cooperation is an easy one to sell to the public and get people upset about, even if it's something that is less possibly true than good old fashioned third party intellectual property theft, which would be something you would negotiate in a trade negotiation. You want to whip up the public sentiment, even if you're using it to fix a different problem.
Which means we still don't know, I suppose.
If I'm reading the tea leaves, the U.S. is going to come in and say, hey, you stop giving your employees bonuses for stealing sensor tech from U.S. companies, and we have a basis for an understanding here. I don't think they're as worried about backdoors in those negotiations as they are in public.
You know, at this point, I do feel like letting up on that accusation would be difficult. Yeah. If all of a sudden they say, hey, we've negotiated a trade deal and we have agreements and now everything's fine, go ahead, use Huawei equipment, it would discredit future accusations.
Or would it? Or do you say, and we got assurances from them during these negotiations that there aren't any back doors and we feel confident in that? I
feel like assurances that there aren't any wouldn't be good enough.
I don't know. And UK are saying they're fine with using Huawei equipment. It does look like Germany might agree. So, you know, there's a little leverage being slipping there, too.
I will say that the British did say it was manageable.
Not manageable. That yeah, no, that's the direct quote. You're right.
Mm. Well, here's something that we do know for sure. Qualcomm announced the Snapdragon X55 5G modem, a follow-up to the first 5G modem, the X50. Qualcomm will begin to share the chip with its partners in the coming months, with first devices shipping before the end of the year, according to Qualcomm. The Snapdragon X55 has a theoretical maximum of 7 gigabits per second compared to 5 gigabits for the X50. It also has support for adaptive antenna tuning for its sub 6 gigahertz 5G, which helps power efficiency, at least in theory. And Qualcomm says that the X55's flexibility should make it easier and a better fit for devices beyond smartphones and Wi-Fi hotspots.
A great example of why you shouldn't buy first generation equipment, right?
Yeah, X50. We now have a better one.
X50 is okay. The X55, it's going to be more compatible. It's going to have better speed. It's also another interesting point about it is it's going to be more useful for non-phone devices, for things like cars and other sort of Internet of Things type devices that are big enough to take advantage of a big modem like this, but it's going to be a little better architected as well.
It feels like in this case, if you had already bought or if you are now buying a device that is 5G compatible, it is really that you want to future proof it because you don't want to buy another one within, you know, 5 years. There is no 5G network anywhere.
No.
Almost. Right. Almost.
Yeah. No, if you're buying a 5G modem right now for that reason, don't, because that's not going to be future proof.
Well, I mean,
you know, the X50 is okay, but it's not going to work nearly as well as the X55, which you can get later this year.
Yes, and the networks aren't. I'm guessing if you have to buy something now and you're thinking, well, 5G is going to happen at some point, I'd better get that one. But yes, it's not the best one you can get at the point that the 5G networks are.
It's because you just need or want to have it now.
Want is more likely, and that's where we get into the maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah, for sure.
Engineers at Rochester Institute of Technology have designed a toilet seat that can measure your... Stop giggling. It's serious.
Sorry, I've been waiting for this story this entire time. Okay, keep going.
The toilet seat that can measure your blood pressure, blood oxygen level, and stroke volume every time someone sits on it. The engineers say it needs more testing, but so far it stands up to comparable hospital equipment like standard ECGs. Another problem to address is how to discard readings from when a user is actually using the toilet rather than just sitting, which can affect readings. If you're wondering why we have avoided the obvious puns in explaining this story, it's because the incomparable Beth Moll used them all in the article for Ars Technica.
It's glorious. You must read Beth Moll's article. We have a link in the show note. Go just to arstechnica.com. I mean, the way she executed the use of the word privy in this article is just, it's a masterstroke, really.
Well, it's interesting to, you know, understand that the toilet is trying to discern from, oh, are you just sitting on the toilet or are you actually using the toilet? And when does anyone sit on the toilet when they're actually not using the toilet?
Well, I mean, that's a delicate way of saying there's when you're sitting and then when you're actually like engaged in the activity that, you know, in other words, when you're sitting waiting to go, that is okay reading. When you're actually in the process of doing the things that you need to do on the toilet,
right,
your heart rate is affecting or peeing.
Pressures might be a little bit different. Yeah.
Tom is trying to say when you're pooping or peeing. Yeah, it's so fine. We're adults. Okay, we can say poo and pee.
Yeah, I mean, there's toilet stuff. My whole thing is just like, I just, you know, if I want the toilet to measure me and it's doing a great job at doing it, wonderful. But you don't want to sit on a toilet unless...
No. You have to sit on the toilet now to take your heartbeat. This is taking advantage of the fact that there is some downtime between the time you sit and the time...
I think it depends on the person.
You execute. There's some. I mean, there's some
of us are 30 seconders.
You don't need a lot, okay? You just need some. Right. And in cases, especially in hospitals where people might not be able to wear a sensor, sure. and it would just be more convenient to have more frequent readings because that's something that a person would be going to do unless they're, of course, bedridden.
I think this is, we're joking because it's a joke, easy, topic, but the goal is that you kind of don't need to worry about it. If it works the way it's supposed to, you just use the toilet as you would a few times a day. You don't worry about it, and it takes your readings. So that's useful in that sense.
The worry is on the part of the scientists who are researching this to figure out, like, how do we make sure that we discard the useless data? Exactly. So there is some data that's polluted in there, and we need to make sure we don't let that affect the other readings. So. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes to keep up to date quickly, subscribe to our sister show, DailyTechHeadlines.com, and you will feel more up to date. All right, Google sent out a press invite today to its keynote at the Game Developers Conference, March 19th. That's not that big a deal. Google's always at the GDC. They always have some things to say, usually developer-oriented, because, hey, it's a Game Developers Conference. But this invite was intriguing people because it said, like, you know, some vague things that sort of alluded that they might have more to say this time than usual. Well, sources are telling Fortune that the event will include the announcement of the launch of Project Stream. Project Stream is Google's Up till now, in development, game streaming service, and all you can play cloud-based video game subscription service. So you'd pay a certain amount of money, probably a month. You'd get access to a bunch of games that they have the rights to, and then you could play them on any device. This is very similar to PlayStation's service, the Shadow service that Patrick has talked about. Also, Fortune notes that we do have some rumors out there that Verizon, Apple, and Amazon are all expected to get into the same business here as well. And Patrick, this has been your beat. You talked to us and introduced us to Shadow. You talk quite a bit on your shows, like Pixel and Monthly Video Game Briefing, about these streaming services. It does seem like we're hitting a new phase in this if Google gets into it.
This could be the start of the real realization of this potential. We've been talking about game streaming for a very long time. In the past couple of years, it seems like every company, gaming company, is investigating this possibility. And it has stayed kind of vague or futuristic for a few years. Now, Google has tested it with Assassin's Creed Odyssey at the end of last year, if you remember, in a partnership with Ubisoft. And I honestly didn't think it was going to be ready to announce anytime soon. But if they do that, if they end up announcing it with a relatively quick release date, availability date, it would be important for two things. First, it actually starts the massive commercial offensive of the service, and it puts Google, which is not primarily a gaming company, in direct competition with all of the platform holders, meaning PlayStation, Nintendo, and Xbox now have a competitor which doesn't even require you to own the device. And that could be industry changing.
Yeah, and it would put the marketing muscle behind it, right? Because you've convinced me that the Shadow service is a pretty good service, but I know a lot of people have questions about it. It isn't scaling the same as a cloud service because you're not just going into the cloud, you're getting access to an entire machine, right?
Yeah, the Shadow service is really apart from all of the other ones. All of the ones that we are hearing about just offer game streaming. So you log in and you can choose the game you stream and you stream it. The Shadow service gives you access to a PC in the cloud. So you can do whatever you want with the PC. And I actually went and tested it again. I've been testing it here and there for a couple of years since its launch, maybe even 3 years now or four. And I am in Finland. The servers are in France, so it is far from an ideal situation. But the game I was testing is Overwatch, which is a first-person shooter, requires very fast action. I'm not going to tell you it ran as well as the one that I had on my computer, but it was playable. And for a game, it's the most lag-dependent type of game you can imagine. And it was definitely playable across the vast divide between France and Finland. So that to me says these services have matured. The Shadow service is one of them, and they are now becoming real. And if Google indeed announces it, that will be day one of the era of game streaming services being an actual reality. I'm not even counting, things like OnLive that did exist and PlayStation Now that does exist, because those were always kind of side projects or things that might have worked technically, but commercially didn't have the kind of offerings you would want for various reasons. So this could be the start.
Yeah, I'm tempted to make comparisons to previous product lines, like there were smartphones and then the iPhone came and everything changed, or there were desktop operating systems that had Windows and then Windows came and everything changed. So this does feel like the moment when the big guys are going to get in. Is this the kind of situation where if you're Apple, Amazon, Google, or even Verizon, you have enough muscle to make this popular, where even if the existing options are superior, you can market against them and get all the users?
Well, the big advantage of this type of service is that the onus of computer of equipment is not on the end user. Mm-hmm. It's on the company, meaning you don't need a console. You don't need a powerful PC. You don't need anything. You could do this on a phone. You could do this on a TV screen. You just launch the app or the service and you're playing immediately. So there is no barrier to accessing that service in a way that is very different from what has been the case until now for most gaming services. So this is a long way of saying anyone could potentially become the distributor of games in a very easily accessible manner. Verizon, Apple, Amazon, anyone who has the technology could potentially compete in that area. So, and this is very, not damaging, but this is a dangerous situation for the established major players in that industry.
Yeah. I mean, it's companies that have good cloud services and robust networking, Amazon, Google. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can argue about Apple and iCloud, but they've been doing it for a while. So they certainly have the infrastructure for it. Verizon is a carrier, right? They certainly have the infrastructure for it. So, yeah, it makes sense that they would want to get in there. Where somebody, even a company like Sony, isn't a networking company, isn't a cloud services company. So, yeah.
In that game, Sony probably has the least technical capabilities. It seems they are ramping them up, as they probably should, but Microsoft is much better positioned for that. Yeah. I will also add that, of course, not everyone is going to be able to enjoy those services, as I always say this. But the fact that not everyone, you know, someone will tell us, well, I only have ADSL. Clearly, you're not in the best position for this. But many people will be able to take advantage of them. And the fact that you can't play every game doesn't mean that you can't play any game. So the ease of access can be interesting in some cases. And that might be a big enough market that some companies will take advantage of it.
Very good.
Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. Speaking of taking advantage of the cloud, we're our own little cloud. Submit stories and vote on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. And we also have Nate Langson back with a short preview on the next text message podcast special, Weird Farm Stuff Edition. Go.
Thanks, guys. This week, you can join me as I explore a dairy farm in rural Ireland and find out how facial recognition technology for cows works. That's right, for cows. We also explore a UK startup that's made a version of Tinder for farmers looking to breed their livestock. And just to prove we're not normally talking about weird farm stuff on this show, we also have the CEO of Patreon, Jack Conti, on to shed some light about what's next for the company keeping Tom and I in business. That's all in episode 158 of Text Message, available now at techpodcast.uk or wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, happy President's Day, America.
Aw, thank you, Nate.
Aw, thanks.
I part of my President's Day was enjoying this very moving episode of Text Message.
Ooh, very nice.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, Visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
All right, enough of that. Let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. Rob from Ramstein AFB wanted to ask Patrick specifically, because he's on the show on Tuesdays, about 5G in Europe. Rob says, Patrick, I know you haven't talked about this in a few weeks, but I figured since the resident socialist is on today, what's the situation in Europe in regards to 5G? I've just moved to Germany from the States, so I know I'm going to miss out on the initial rollout at least for a few years. If I remember correctly, 4G came to Europe later in the States, later than the States, rather, but ended up being faster. Do you think it will be the same case over here?
So is Rob, are you talking about 5GE or actual 5G? Because that, you know, I'm confused now with what you do. 5G is following
Let's
the
call
same...
it 5G for the purposes of
right,
debate.
Right. So, yeah, I think it's following the same kind of schedule roadmap as 4G was, the comparison between the two, meaning it's going to come a little bit later, maybe 6 months to a year, but it's actually going to work. So, you know, that's what we have going for us.
And I think those time gaps feel bigger in the few months when they are happening. We're not talking years here. I remember covering for ZDTV Radio, I guess it was Tech TV Radio by then, the rollout of 3G in Europe and how we weren't getting it here in the States and that Europe was way ahead of us. And eventually we got it, and then it felt like there really wasn't a difference. LTE kind of felt the same way. It was weird that one time I went to Europe and they didn't have LTE yet, and I did back in the States. But those things generally pass, and then you reach a sort of parity. So I don't know that it makes much of a difference.
It doesn't really. I mean, we're starting the tests now, at least in France, in a few cities, and the more generalized rollout will happen soon after. It's also, when it's rolled out in the US, it's so big that it's rolled out in two or three cities, and the rest of the country doesn't have it. Usually the people reporting on it are in San Francisco, so it feels like they all have it, and they're all super, but you know, the rest of the country often doesn't have it yet, so that plays a role. As well.
Well, thanks, Rob, for the feedback and the question for Patrick Beja. And also on the subject of Patrick Beja, thanks, Patrick Beja, for being on the show with us. We know that you are keeping warm in Finland. But besides that, what else is going on and how can people keep up with your work?
There are a couple of things you could do. If you enjoy gaming, you could go listen to Pixels, the latest episode of which we talk about Tetris 99, which is a battle royale Tetris, the most incredible thing that was announced last week. It took the world by storm. And we talk about a bunch of other things, the Activision Blizzard layoffs and the rocky launch of Anthem, among other things. You can also listen to the monthly video game briefing, which I do with Scott Johnson, which is an offshoot of the Daily Tech News Show. It's a monthly show, and we talk a little bit more to the casual audience. You don't need every single detail of every game coming out. Maybe that show is for you. So Pixels on the one hand and MVGB on the other.
Get the complete video game picture by subscribing to both. Hey, our goal each month is to get one more patron than last month, and you could be that person that puts us over the edge. If you haven't become a member of DTNS, you're missing out. There's cool stuff in there that you can get in an RSS feed. I think a lot of people don't realize, like, well, I don't have to go to a separate website to get the things. You can get an RSS feed from Patreon when you're a member of DTNS that will give you all of the cool DTNS audio right in whatever podcatcher you are using. So, for instance, today, if you're a member, you got an update from Shannon Morse from ThreatWire about some Android vulnerabilities that happened over the last week. There's all kinds of cool stuff like that showing up at patreon.com/DTNS. Go sign up right now.
And if you have feedback for us, we want to hear it. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. I'm still waiting for us to change the UTC part of it. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.